Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
I don't really comment on people on Twitter. Those people are idiots.
Hey, find me at Joe 0670. Joe Ostrowski with you till 10 o'clock, Sports Radio 670. The Score coming up this hour at 720. We'll check in with Pro Football Focus's Brad Spielberger, also a big Bears fan. So I'll get his thoughts on the Bears 3-0 start. Had an interesting back and forth with him last night during that Mahomes game. So I want to talk to him about that on the air. Bring it to you guys. 8 o'clock, Ben Heisler in KC. And we'll do some sports betting stuff. Jay Zawoski at 8:20, Score Rewind Hour in the 9 o'clock hour. If you want to chime in, you can text or call 312-644-6767, 312-644-6767. So let's get to David Ross. Game 1, Cubs-Marlins series tomorrow. Ross decides to go with Kyle Hendricks for Game 1 instead of the guy that's in contention to be the NL Cy Young Award winner, in Yu Darvish, in a hell of a bounce-back season for him. Here's a couple minutes of Rossi talking about the decision and also what he expects Kimbrel's role to be in this wild card round against Miami.
Kyle's resume, we've talked a lot about when we talked about giving him the ball to start the season, what he's been through in his career and the stages he's been on and the way he's performed. I think it's really easy. It's very comforting from my seat when he takes the ball on any stage and at any point during the season. So I know he's excited. I'm excited. You know, we've got to win two of them. I'm excited about you when he, you know, I can say the same thing about you, Darvish, when he takes the mound as well. So I'm glad we've got those horses. I'm excited to watch Kyle suit up and take the bump tomorrow.
Rossi, I would notice that Hendricks, I think, is second in innings pitched for the National League. He's usually not that high up there. I was curious, do you think that's just your managing style, or does it have to do with, you know, he's really got this curveball that's allowing him to turn over lineups a little bit better, more a deeper arsenal, or is it just how it's worked?
I've given our starters in general probably a lot more leash when they're throwing well. You know, that's part of it. I also think like his performance, you know, throughout the season, you know, I believe in him. I think he's a really good option, even third time through the lineup. And then there's got to be a lot of credit that goes to his continued growth as a player and a pitcher. You know, the guy puts in a lot of work. He studies really hard. He's constantly trying to evolve and make himself better. And all the things that go into that are really a credit to him. So I think there's a mix of those two reasons.
Hey, Rossi, what can you say about Kimbrel with the success he's had in his career to kind of go through that in-season working on his mechanics, taking a step back from the closer role, just what he had to go through in the middle of a season to get to the point that he was over the last month?
Yeah, I was trying to look back on, you know, some things that I was most proud of this year, and I think that's one of them. The way that Craig handled the environment that he was presented with, along with having, you know, some issues with his daughter in this environment, still coming to work and overcoming a lot of adversity off the field and then coming here and overcoming on the field. I mean, this guy had a lot of pressure on him and didn't have the success he wanted to immediately last year when he came into this organization, and then started off a little bit slow and worked through some things, and he worked and he continued to work and he never hung his head. the phone rang down there and other people's name was called when it's his time to get that call and his resume and for him to continue to work and never be pissed and never put blame or make excuses. All he did was come in and go to work. And that's a true professional. That's a man of character, the guy that is important to this group. And the reason why we're in this situation is because of how he's continued to get better and perform. So I'm really proud of that man.
David Ross, going with Kyle Hendricks game one, Yu Darvish game two, talking about all the adversity that Kimbrel has had to go through. By the way, Ross also mentioned that John Lester is the game three guy. Hope it doesn't get to three games. And I'd love to complain about it, but the problem is, who else you got? Who else you feel comfortable with? He's been there in the past, at least. You just don't know what you're going to get out of him, and I'm sure it would be a short leash. But that's one of the many issues coming into this season. They just don't have a deep rotation, and that's why I'm not expecting a deep run here, especially if they were to advance when you get to these best of fives. What are you doing? Game three. It's vital. The matchup is, I wonder, how do Cubs fans feel about this? Because the way things finished up, and I know it was a poor close for the White Sox regular season. We get that. But they're in the playoffs for the first time since 2008. It's a little different. They have such a young roster. And this might be the last postseason with this crew. I don't sense the same excitement as we would have most years. And not sure if it's because of the Marlins or they think that the Cubs don't have a deep run and they can't hit right now. Hit 220 as a team. And for the most part, what has Schwarber been doing? Bryant and Baez. You need those horses and they're not doing anything. But maybe the juices don't get flowing too much with the Marlins. Probably will tomorrow once we see them play for real. But how did the Marlins even get here? They can't hit either. They were dealing with COVID at the start of this regular season. It's an amazing story there that they're even part of this. But I guess get used to it. At least I think so. Because I don't think they're going to peel this back and go back to the old playoff format. I think we're good for 16 moving forward, at least 14. Here's more of David Ross just talking about managing in the postseason for the first time and the expectations of his club.
I mean, yeah, there's nerves for sure. I was laying in bed last night feeling like today was the day that the games were starting. I was just actually talking to David Bodie about that, you know, having to kind of say over and over in your head, the game is not tomorrow. It's not tomorrow. You're anxious to get started. This is all the hard work's for these guys. I've told you guys a number of times how proud I am of this group and what they were able to accomplish this season to get to this point. And now the fun begins. Now it's time to let loose and numbers don't matter. Stats don't matter. You know, mistakes don't matter. It's all about getting the W at the end of the game. And so this is a group that knows about that really well. And from a manager standpoint, it's nice to be going into this environment with a group that I know really well. And of course, I get nervous, you know, first day back from taking my kids to school. Like that's just my personality. And I think it helps me prepare and be ready.
David, good morning. I've heard you comment before about nerves you felt or feeling green at the beginning of your playing career. Have you had those moments as a manager when you felt like a rookie? And bigger picture, over 60 games, has it really affirmed to you that this is something you're good at, that this was a good move for you?
Ooh, I've definitely felt green many a times. I've gotten across from certain managers where you feel like they're very organized in how they're doing things. I've learned a lot from sitting on the other side where you feel like a guy may be a step ahead of you or may pull something out that you don't see or weren't thinking of for sure. How people have handled some things, how I've gotten to learn from some mistakes that I may have made in certain situations and trusting a guy that's been in the lineup and maybe better spot pinch hitting and vice versa. Sometimes, you know, pinch hitting's not always the easiest thing to do and coming off the bench without at bat. So, Yeah, man, I've felt green. And as far as this is something I'm good at, I have no idea. That's you guys, you know, judge me on all that. My bosses judge me on that. I try to be myself, learn from my experiences, value the opinions and people around me, and communicate with the players what I'm thinking and why I'm thinking those things. I feel like that's all I can do in this seat is put my best foot forward with the information I have and the group that I have around me. I don't know whether I'm good at it or not. I literally have no idea. I'm just trying to be myself and do the best I can for this organization and the guys in that room.
Cubs Marlins tomorrow. It's going to be fun. A lot of fun. I mean, thanks Major League Baseball. Put the Cubs and the Sox on at the same time. Ridiculous. Don't miss any of the action right here on Sports Radio 670, The Score. Something really cool that just started a few weeks ago, that if you're at home, you're doing some work, and you want to listen to Pat and Ron, tell Alexa to turn on 670 this week. No, Alexa, don't go on now. The thing just lit up because I said Alexa in my office. It's lighting up again. Stop saying Alexa, Joe. Did it again. But we're streaming the games now. We're streaming Cubs games on the radio.com app. So you can listen on your smart speaker. Let's go with that. Or from your phone, whatever. Like, if you're not in your car, it's really cool that we're streaming the games. So you want to hear Pat and Ron? You can listen to Pat and Ron. Want to sync it up with your TV? Go ahead. Have at it. Really cool aspect about being part of Cubs Radio here. Sports Radio 670, The Score. But it's going to be a lot of fun. Please, please, please do not show 2003 NLCS. I mean, how many times? We should have a prop bet on that, the number of times that will be referenced, or they're going to say his name or talk about Dusty, Alex Gonzalez, Wood and Pryor, and yeah, Moises Alou. Please don't do that. Don't. No, nobody wants that. Let's not. Let's just not. Leave him be. Leave him alone. It's fine. It's mostly going to be Chicago and some Florida people watching anyways. We don't want to see that. I mean, the Marlins have won titles. They don't really care about that anymore. Come on. Not a big deal to them. Joe Osho, Sports Radio 670, The Score. Coming up next, I'm going to check in with Pro Football Focus's Brad Spielberger on what he's seen so far with this Bears offense and how it changes things moving forward. As long as Nick Foles can stay healthy and he's under center for the Bears, and just what he's noticing, some trends going on around the league because the scoring is through the roof. Is it going to continue? That is next. You've got 670 The Score and the radio.com app.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Nick Foles in charge at the 37-yard line of Atlanta on the right hash. Trio left, one to the right, takes the snap, giving a look left. Blitz pickup by Montgomery, throws left side, comeback. Robinson the catch, breaks a tackle, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown Bears! Allen Robinson goes the distance, breaking a tackle and a big one. And we got a brand new ball game, folks. 26-22, points pending. 38-yard touchdown, second for Nick Foles since coming in for Mitch Trubisky.
Not great tackling by a couple Falcons defenders on that play. Jeff Joniak on the station WBBM 780 and 105.9 FM. This is Joe Ostrowski with you on Sports Radio 670, The Score. Let's talk Bears with our friend Brad Spielberger from Pro Football Focus on Twitter at PFF underscore Brad. And he joins me on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Brad, I know it's year one for you at Pro Football Focus, your first actual football season over at PFF. How's it been? And is there anything, you know, a guy that studies the game so much and you love the sport, but is there anything that you've learned with some of the access or conversations you've had with people at PFF that you never really thought about before that you've learned recently for this season?
That could maybe be, you know, the understatement of the century if I said I'd learned some things. So, you know, first season now, or first time now where, you know, football is actually happening and I'm in the building, or, you know, the virtual building, so to speak. I learned a ton, and a lot of it is stuff that I really had no understanding of and no knowledge of, and fortunately for both of us, I think, some of it has to do with quarterback play.
All right, tell me about it. What have you learned that maybe something you didn't consider about the most important position in all sports?
So I definitely wouldn't say that I have any sort of mastery understanding of what it takes to be an NFL quarterback. But one thing that I truly had zero knowledge of was all that goes on before you're even hiking the football. And I think that we really underestimate how much value can be added to an offense before the snap. Just shifting protection with the offensive line, getting you guys in the right spot, seeing the defense and reading the defense and understanding what you're going up against, it just makes the game so much easier. If you're a little bit lacking in the athletic skills or abilities, as a quarterback, you can really make up ground with the mental aspects of the game. And I think we saw that on Sunday, and I think we're going to continue to see that going forward.
It sounds like, as you say that, it is something that I was thinking about watching the Bears game on Sunday and just watching other great quarterbacks in the league. Like on Sunday night, we're watching Aaron Rodgers. Last night, the entire world's watching Pat Mahomes and what he was able to do. Just the things you see on the football field, even a little bit with Foles that you just never saw out of Trubisky, so you could understand why a lot of the players didn't have the same belief in that guy. He truly never grasped the offense, and I know they're probably going to have to depend on him again, but it's noteworthy that Matt Nagy went out of his way to say on the record, I want Trubisky to know the offense better than I do.
Yeah, no, I mean, that always seemed to be a struggle, and actually it's funny. You mentioned the Chiefs game last night, and it's probably a weird example because he just threw the ball away. But something stuck out to me last night with Patrick Mahomes. And again, this isn't trying to compare the two, which will obviously happen for the rest of their lives. But Wink Martindale, the defensive coordinator of the Ravens, is famous for his pressures that he brings that are just coming out of bizarre alignments. These sim pressures where guys are facing, the sideline, they're not even looking forward, all sorts of weird stuff. And Patrick Mahomes pre-snap didn't recognize what he saw. He hiked the ball and just threw it in the dirt 5 yards away for no completion. It may have even been a third down at the end of the series. And as he's walking to the sideline, you can tell he's talking to Andy Reid already, just saying, I had no idea what that look was. I knew it wasn't going to go well. So I just didn't even try to make things more difficult for myself. And so it's a weird example because nothing happened, but you need those plays. Mm-hmm.
I, something I was talking about earlier, Brad, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this, is I believe this year we're going to learn a lot about Matt Nagy, even though he's a guy that has a 12-win season under his belt, and he's been named coach of the year. We all understand that. But there were a lot of questions last year. But now we're going to really know. He has the guy that he wanted in the offseason now running his offense for as long as he can stay healthy. But just the way he played this out, man, I think it's remarkable. He targets Foles in the offseason. He brings in all these coaches that have worked with Foles that also want to work with Foles again. So he builds this consensus, which he planned all along, goes to the general manager. How about a quarterback competition? I didn't have an option last year. I would have liked to made moves multiple times, but I wasn't able to because the option was Chase Daniel. How about a competition? Hey, we don't have to give the game away from your guy. We'll give him one more shot, but how about a real competition? Well, we think you had your guy. My guy is Nick Foles. Our guy is Nick Foles. Can you go and get this guy for me? I promise he's not going to start week one. It's Detroit anyways. Trubisky can take care of the Lions. And he against a terrible defense, missing multiple pieces, he gave Foles nearly an entire half to show the world what he can do in this offense against a terrible D, and now there's no debate. There's no going to the principal's office because you can't go back to Trubisky after what we just saw, and he just happened to do it right before you start to see teams like the Colts and the Bucks. It's truly something. The way I don't know if it was completely planned out, but the way he played chess here, I gotta respect it.
I'm totally with you. It was probably an example where you talk about process over results. And in this case, I don't think the process was too clean, but you can't really argue with the results. And the thing with Nick Foles, a couple things to keep an eye out for, is really with Nagy and running his offense, as it really is, you just found a guy that can do what he wants to do. And two numbers that stuck out to me. First one is 2018 and 2019, the Bears ranked 25th in the percent of passing yards that came from yards after the catch. The 49ers led the NFL at about 52%, and the Chiefs have been top five in the metric going back, you know, pre-Mahomes, back to Alex Smith days, back to forever. Second number I have for you. Mitch Trubisky, coming into the Atlanta Falcons game, led the NFL in time to throw at 3.12 seconds before he got rid of the ball. Okay, that is over a second more than Foles, who was at, oh no, excuse me, that's a second more. Foles was at 2.2 seconds before he threw the ball against the Falcons, and he had 52% of his yards from yards after the catch, because he's putting it in space, he's putting it in front of his receivers, and he's letting the playmakers do all the work. Matt Nagy doesn't need a quarterback to do all the work for them. You know, we watched the Chiefs last night with Tyreek Hill and Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I mean, they threw 8,000 screen passes last night. Nagy wants to do the same thing, is get the ball out quickly, get it to your playmakers in space, and then let them go to work.
Why has Nick Foles excelled coming off the bench and at times had issues when defenses have a week to prepare for him?
It's a great question. It really is a great question. I do think that as much as we consider the difficulty for a quarterback to come in cold and face a defense, there's probably also a lot of difficulty for the defense, you know, who's been preparing for a specific quarterback all week to then adjust. Because, you know, Trubisky and Foles really aren't very similar style quarterbacks. So, you know, one wrinkle for this weekend, which you mentioned with the full week of preparation, you know, add on top of that the fact that the Colts head coach is Frank Reich, who was the, you know, the Eagles offensive coordinator, maybe quarterbacks coach, in the Super Bowl year with Nick Foles in Philadelphia. And there were rumors that he actually contemplated trading for Nick Foles this offseason before they eventually settled on Phil Rivers. So he knows Nick Foles better than, you know, pretty much anyone else in the NFL, except for, as you mentioned, you know, the entire Bears offensive coaching staff. So they know Nick Foles really well this week. So it's going to be a test for him.
The numbers say the Colts defense is terrific, and it could be just sample size and the offenses they faced, like the Jets this past weekend. But how much of a step up in class is it going from Lions, Giants, Falcons defenses? The Lions, they were losing all those corners there at the end, compared to the Colts this week.
Yeah, so, I mean, not only are those three defenses at full strength, at full health, probably still bottom 10 or maybe bottom 5 defenses, but, I mean, as you mentioned, you then add on top of the fact the Lions and the Falcons were playing like their fourth cornerback. So the Colts are pretty healthy, you know, so far, and they have a much better defense. You know, they trade a first-round pick for DeForest Buckner on the interior of the defensive line. I think it's going to be a huge test for Whitehair and Daniels and Ifedi in the middle this week. And then, you know, Justin Houston, good edge rusher. The Bears tackles had not seen an edge rusher at all yet. I mean, the Lions, Trey Flowers is okay. You know, the Falcons were missing Tack McKinley this week, and Dante Fowler was hurt. He played about half the snaps on defense. So, you know, they really haven't seen that. So this is definitely a step up in class. But their secondary is very exploitable. And I think, you know, you mentioned again before how they made the move now. The issue with Trubisky is that when the defense was good against the run and bad against the pass, he couldn't take advantage of that. The Colts are pretty good up front. They have, you know, obviously Darius Leonard and all those D linemen I mentioned. But, you know, I'm gonna wait to, you know, see if Xavier Rhodes can have another good week before I declare him any good. And I think you can really attack this secondary. We just got to see a quarterback that can actually push the ball down the field.
Do you view this matchup as a bit of a toss-up here, or do you think one team has a clear-cut advantage?
I think it being in Chicago helps, although I guess, you know, home field advantage isn't much of a thing these days, but I do think this being a home game is pretty big. I think it's a good matchup for the Colts. You know, for all the reasons I mentioned, you know, I think the offensive line is really good, and obviously the Bears' biggest threat on their entire roster is the pass rush. So, you know, if you can neutralize Khalil Mack and Robert Quinn off the edge and Hicks in the middle with Quentin Nelson, you know, Phil Rivers also was getting the ball out extremely quickly this season. I think he might have the lowest time to throw in the NFL so far. So that is how you beat this Bears defense. So it is definitely going to be a challenge.
This is the Joe O Show, Sports Radio 670, The Score. My guest, Brad Spielberger from Pro Football Focus. Make sure you're following him on Twitter at PFF underscore Brad. Brad, it's funny. I saw somebody make the comment. I believe it was Josh Friedman, a local TV guy. He had mentioned on Twitter during the Bills game the other day that Josh Allen's everything that the Bears were hoping that they were going to get out of Mitchell Trubisky. And I felt that it was pretty spot on. He's in the MVP race. I know it's three games, but he's in the MVP race with Russell Wilson right now. Do you think he can continue, maybe not this level, but this top end play?
You know, I think the big thing with him this season so far, and the thing that Trubisky couldn't pull together is, you know, they have a good offense, or they had a good offense that would sustain drives. Now what Allen's doing is when he gets in the red zone, he's either bulldozing it in himself or he's now finding his guy. And he had two throws this week, one to Stephon Diggs that was like 4 seconds after the snap. He sat in the pocket, waited forever, and then hit him in the back of the end zone. That's probably the first time he's ever done that in his career. I will say, you know, I know everyone loves to think that, you know, PFF hates the Bills and hates Josh Allen. Here's the thing. He is still excelling in a lot of the areas that are typically unstable. So, for example, outside of the pocket, his numbers are out of control. But inside the pocket, his numbers have been pretty pedestrian so far. I mentioned the red zone success that tends to regress. You know, eventually you tend to not convert on every single offensive possession. And then finally, you know, in that Rams game, you know, we saw the highlights, but he also had a fumble where he ran backwards 25 yards and Aaron Donald, you know, smacked him and stole the football. And he threw a very ugly interception. So in the same way with Trubisky, they can make all the good plays. We know that. They're a top 10 pick in the National Football League. It's not only about making the great plays. It's about limiting those bad plays. And he still does struggle there. So there's still some room to grow.
I love hearing from people that study this about some of the noisy statistics that don't really mean a lot. Throw me some examples here of stats that your average football fan looks at, references every single week, but they're not really telling you the true story of anything.
Sure. I mean, I think the big stuff at the top level is lacking an understanding in game scripts. So, like, our favorite stat to poke fun at is when people say, well, you know, this team is, you know, 20-0 when they run the ball at least 25 times or they have at least 100 times. But here's the thing, folks. As you see every Sunday, if your team goes up by 21 points in the first half, they're then going to run the ball 1,000 times. They're going to have a ton of attempts. They're going to have a ton of rushing yards. It doesn't mean that's why they won the game. It means that it happened in a game that they won. So it's simple stuff like that. I mean, yards per carry right now, you know, one guy could break a 70-yard run next Sunday and his yards per carry could go up 3 yards. So there's just stuff like that where you got to look behind the numbers a little bit.
Yeah, I love that too. Just in the sports betting stuff, and you hear trends thrown, like, when they run the ball at least 20 times, they have this great record. Like, yeah, every team has a great record because they're winning. That's why they're running the ball, unless they're named the Atlanta Falcons. They want to pass when they're up by multiple scores.
I got a great tip for you.
Okay.
Kneel the ball. If you kneel the ball more than one time, you're going to win every time. It's a lock.
Man, that is a strong trend. That's a real good one. Hopefully I can find somewhere where I can bet on that.
I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, please. Why is scoring off the charts just a few games in compared to most years? And is it as much due to the officiating as some believe it is?
So I did see a breakdown today, and the numbers are pretty legitimate, that the, you know, offensive holding is way down, offensive pass interference is down, and then our defensive, you know, defensive holding, defensive pass interference is a little bit up. So, you know, again, we just kind of talked about how small sample size, but it has been 3 weeks now, and, you know, how many games is that? You're 50 games now, so it does look like they're trying to emphasize offense. They're trying to emphasize scoring. That's obviously been the push of the league for the last, you know, however many years. So I wouldn't be surprised if there was some emphasis, you know, with the referees this year. Hey, let's let some more stuff go on offense. Let's call less holdings and really just continue to promote passing offense.
It's not fair what Pat Mahomes can do. Like, how do you stop that? He's doing underhand passes to fullbacks. He's throwing the offensive linemen, doing the jump pass that everyone loves to see from him. You have what many viewed as a great defense, but when you're going against a Pat Mahomes, a Russell Wilson right now, as long as they let him cook, I don't know if any defense can stop these guys.
You know, that's kind of where we've arrived, you know, as a, I don't want to say as a company, I want to speak for everyone in the building, but I mean, that's kind of the determination is that eventually great offense is going to beat out great defense. I mean, the Ravens looked like one of the worst defenses in the league last night, and they're probably one of the best defenses in the league. But yeah, I mean, he made some throws. You know, the ball to Tyreek Hill in the corner of the end zone is legitimately an unguardable play. You know, I think even Lewis Riddick, who's been great so far, I love having a DB that actually, you know, works the games because he understands coverage and all that way better than any of us. He basically said, I mean, Marcus Peters could not have played that ball better if he tried. It just didn't matter. And Mahomes had about four or five of those plays last night where the defense did everything right. They filled every gap, and it just didn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it feels right now. How many quarterbacks in the league do you think it just doesn't matter? I mean, Mahomes is in the class by himself. But Russell Wilson playing great football, same deal for Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers was an underdog, crazy. Pat Mahomes was an underdog last night, just wild. How long is that list right now?
It's a pretty short list, you know, of guys that really, the thing with Mahomes, which I think an article may have come out today with PFF, and if not, it'll be talked about a bunch, but unlike any quarterback we've ever seen, including the Russell Wilsons, and Aaron Rodgers is kind of in his boat too, but he just avoids the negatives better than everyone else too. So we're going to sit here and talk about, you know, the Tyreek Hill touchdown and all the plays. He does have a couple errant throws a game, but in general, he just doesn't let things go south. Like, his worst game is still like an average NFL game. And I think even the Russell Wilsons of the world, even the last couple of years of Aaron Rodgers, like, we saw those, you know, those cracks in the armor, and it happens. So, like you said at the top, that he is in a league of his own. I agree. I think Russell Wilson's really good, and I still think Patrick Mahomes is, like, in another tier. Right now, I'd say it's probably Mahomes, Wilson, Brady. I mean, Lamar, if the Ravens are up. of guys where if they execute and if the offensive line, if the offense executes the play correctly, it's going to get the yards it intended. I think it's probably like those four guys.
And Lamar 0-6 when the Ravens are trailing at halftime, 20-0 when they're leading at halftime. So that's why I chuckled at that comment. Brad Spielberger, ProFootballFocus.com. Follow him on Twitter at PFF_Brad. Thank you so much for the time, Brad.
Thank you for having me on. I always appreciate it.
There's some good stuff there from Brad Spielberger. I'm fascinated by the stuff that you learn when you work for a company like that. You have access to data that a lot of people don't have, which stats are noisy, which ones aren't. It's interesting. It's really, really fascinating there. So there's some good stuff from Brad. I'd like to check in with him from time to time. And he pays close attention to the Bears because he's a big fan of the team. White Sox win today. Lucas Giolito took a perfect game into the seventh inning. They lead the best of three series against Oakland 1-0. We'll hear from the Sox locker room when we get back. 8 o'clock, we'll check in with Ben Heisler, Chicago guy who covers the Chiefs as part of his jobs in Kansas City. So we'll talk some Pat Mahomes at the top. All that coming up in the Joe O Show, 670 The Score on the radio.com app.
That's great analyzing.
Pretty cool. It was neat to see. I know there was a question about would it affect his last outing, would it affect this one? And obviously it didn't. He threw the ball very, very well, took us deep into the ball game. And he was very, very much under control and very calm. I think he was excited about the opportunity. And obviously he managed his emotions very, very well.
Skipper Renteria on his ace, Lucas Giolito, gave the Sox all they could ask for in game one of the 2020 postseason. Seven innings, one earned run, eight strikeouts, took a perfect game into the seventh before that was broken up. In the eighth, gave up a walk and a hit. He said, okay, you're good. And then the bullpen took care of things as the White Sox win game one in the best of three wild card set at the Athletics. Joe O Show, Sports Radio 670, The Score. I mean, I just can't get off this point. If the Sox eliminate the A's here in this round, it's going to be a long offseason for Bob Melvin. With a sample size of 14 games coming into this one, a 14-0 record, one or two in every offensive statistical category against left-handed pitching. And I know, some of them on the Royals, some of them on the Tigers, we all understand that. But that's a large sample size with pretty much the same lineup. And he decided to go with a lefty. Gives up two homers, three earned runs, six hits, and three innings. Ball game. That's all Giolito needed. That's all your ace needs, man. It was great to see today. Joe Osho, 670, The Score. 8 o'clock, Ben Heisler, 820. Jay Zawoski, 9 o'clock, Score Rewind. Let's take a listen to Rick Renteria today. Just talking about game one, the experience of it, and why he had three different lineups ready for this game.
Huge spark, but Adams, he's always ready. We sent out, believe it or not, I sent out three lineups last night. And they all had different scenarios in it. I always, let the players know why there are three lineups and where are the options so that none of them are caught off guard. Old school times, you wouldn't know what you were doing until you came to the ballpark. I try to be a little bit proactive and give guys a heads up so they can get some rest, be ready. I mean, not that they wouldn't, but, it's a big league. You want to get them as prepared as possible, or at least give them the feel of what they're going to be able to do the next day. And it was just one of those days. I mean, we went through the morning work with Eloy, to see how he was going to do. He was doing pretty good. Obviously, in what we were looking at, it didn't seem like, it'd be worth it to push him because it might set him back. And fortunately for us, it worked out. And we'll see how he's doing tomorrow. I imagine it'll still be fluid, but hopefully we'll have an easier task of putting the lineup together.
So here's more of Renteria. Lucas Giolito's rolling. He's got a perfect game going. You're thinking, is he really going to do this? He had the no-hitter against Pittsburgh in the regular season. Is he going to have a no-hitter or a perfect game to start the playoffs for the White Sox? 2020 could be the year. He's talking to the media after the game, Renteria was, on why he had his bullpen ready, even though Giolito was rolling.
Because all of us have seen in games where someone is throwing a wonderful ball game. All of a sudden, one hit comes, and all of a sudden, it starts to unravel, and everybody thinks, "Wow, he's throwing such a great ball game." When it really ultimately is about the team, and I think we had to have an opportunity to be able to, at least if needed, be able to get in there, and if something was evolving, to try to put a stop to it. And obviously, he did a great job and got us deep into the ball game, and that's the thinking. I mean, you just don't want to be surprised by something if it starts to unravel and you don't have any options available to you because you're saying to yourself, "Wow, he's throwing so good." I've seen too many games where a no-hitter turns into a loss because nobody's ready to go ahead and maybe stop something that starts to steamroll. And we just did our due diligence. That's all. He was throwing the ball great, and we knew he was throwing the ball great, and we were expecting that he would continue to throw the ball great, but we still have to have an out.
Game two tomorrow for the Sox. Dallas Keuchel on the bump with all his postseason experience against Oakland's Chris Bassett. They can wrap that thing up. That is so strange to say that the White Sox could wrap up the series, which started today, tomorrow for the wild card round, and then move on to be one of the eight teams left if they can do that. Let's hope they do. And then the Cubs start their series against the Marlins. Game number one, Kyle Hendricks going. Game two, David Ross decides to go with Yu Darvish. Or was it David Ross? Or was it Theo and everybody else get involved there? Going to be fascinating. Love playoff baseball. October baseball is here. And I hope we get some sort of a run out of both teams in town. Joe Ostrowski with you. Sports Radio 670. The Score. Fun 8 o'clock hour planned. We'll check in with Jay Zawoski at 8:20, but coming up next, Ben Heisler from KC, our buddy, does fantasy, he does gambling, he's a Chicago guy, big Cubs fan, but he also gets to watch Pat Mahomes up close and personal. He's a lucky guy. will live vicariously through Ben next. This is 670 The Score on the Radio.com app.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.